¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
$1,000
on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Girl,
this thing.
Turn to my whole dress.
Girl, this thing.
Great gowns.
Girl,
beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Girl,
no, it hasn't.
Hi, this is just a wellness check for Lauren. Making sure she didn't go into early labor, because I just watched the part where Aiden says he might have just shit himself a little bit when he accidentally honked his front horn with his knee. And I hope you're all okay. Hi,
my name is Chelsea Fairless. Guys, I'm here to report that Lauren did in fact go into labor after watching Aiden masturbate.
No, no, guys. I am here.
Just barely.
I am in my last weeks of pregnancy. I don't know if you can tell from my voice, guys, recovering from that cold that is going around. So, of course, I was in a great headspace to watch this episode.
Also, I'm screaming at our setup today. Because Lauren is sick, we decided to have a socially distanced recording. So you're actually sitting about 15 feet away from me.
We are in two separate rooms. We can see each other. It's giving 2020.
So close yet so far away.
So what did we think of the first episode of And Just Like That? Episode title, Outlook Good. A bit presumptuous?
Yes, this episode was written and directed by Michael Patrick King. He always writes and directs the first episode of And Just Like That. And am I happy that the show is back? Of course. Am I traumatized from watching Aiden masturbate? Yes. But even from watching this first episode, I can see that trimming down the cast a bit has been a positive thing for the show. It feels lighter.
It feels something. I'm so torn because I know there's a selection of people listening right now who refuse to watch the episode, who are like, I feel like we need to give more context before we go into this Aiden masturbating scene. But then there's the other half of the audience who did watch this episode, who definitely want us to talk about Aiden masturbating in his pickup truck.
I don't think we need to give context right now.
I guess first and foremost, well, what did I think of the episode? I mean, I have nothing new to add. I still feel the same way as I did in season 2, where the impulses are correct, and yet they are executed in the most bizarre fashion.
Okay, but aren't you a little bit encouraged by Miranda's plotline?
At least one woman in their 50s is getting a dating storyline.
Yes, and we need people to date for it to feel like Sex and the City. So someone's got a date. And I love that they are giving that to Miranda, finally.
So before we jump into the episode, how much time has elapsed?
I get the vibe that it was a couple months, maybe 3. But wasn't it summer when they ended last season, or was it just summer in Greece?
It's confusing because if I had to guess, it's been a year. But I have subsequently listened to the Writer's Room podcast, and Daddy MPK was like, oh, a month went by. What?
So we have to take him at his word.
Of course, this is his universe.
And this episode opens with a scene of Carrie in her apartment in this insane Simone Rocha ensemble writing postcards to Aiden. This is what she wears to lick stamps.
Well, yes. Carrie, of course, if she's going to do anything, she's going to live in an old-timey state of mind. Now, she is sending Aiden postcards and he's sending blank postcards back, or he's sending blank postcards and she's just writing a heart?
I think they're just sending each other blank postcards. That was my takeaway. Also, we should note that she is in the Gramercy Park apartment. Toto, we are not in Perry Street anymore.
Well, no, they legally cannot go back to that street.
Also, can I just say the size of this apartment? Not since Panic Room. Have I seen such a cavernous pre-war apartment in New York City?
Well, knowing that only a month has gone by instead of a year makes a little more sense that this apartment is completely empty. But do you know what Carrie needs? Carrie needs those yoga socks or those like hospital socks because she is constantly running in this apartment. And I was horrified because there's also a gag throughout this episode where her alarm is going off. And at one point she's running, she slips, and she falls on her newly replaced hip. I was like, okay, so clearly this is where we're going. And it's like, no.
Well, I thought that was a fun reversal of the episode of Sex and the City where Miranda slips and falls and calls Carrie for help. And she called Miranda in this instance, although Miranda had the decency not to send over Che Diaz to pick her off the floor.
Do we want to guess where Che Diaz is?
We have no idea where Che Diaz is.
Do you think they're still working at the vet office?
I would assume so. I like that they just kind of got rid of Che. And who knows, maybe they'll make reference to Che later in the season. But I'm glad that we didn't get an explanation as to why Che wasn't around. Or Naya, for that matter.
We should explain that, unlike last year when we went scene by scene, we are going to go through the episode by character.
Yeah. So Carrie's plot line is basically that neither she nor Aiden nor any of Carrie's friends understand what exactly they have agreed to in terms of this 5-year break.
Isn't that so fun?
See, you're being a bitch already.
How long have we been recording?
Like 5 minutes.
So Charlotte and Miranda are very chill about how ill-defined this relationship is. Very anti-Miranda. But thankfully, we have Anthony, who I think is the Greek chorus of like, what is happening right now? What do you mean you don't know when he's coming back? That is legitimately crazy.
Yeah, I'm glad at least one of her friends is giving it to her straight.
Also, I find it bizarre that Carrie is this offended because, and I know that in and just like that world, we have the memory of a squirrel or whatever, but Anthony has a legitimate perspective to give this to her, this perspective to her, seeing that his husband left him, went to Japan, didn't say when he was coming back, and became a Shinto monk, which I really thought was going to get referenced when he's asking Carrie, what do you mean you don't know when Aiden's coming back?
So Aiden calls her.
This already is annoying because the last time we've seen or heard from Aiden, he's like, I got to go down to Virginia. I can't talk to you. I certainly can't talk to you when I'm with my kids. And yet here he is calling in the middle of the night from his pickup truck, drunk, wonderful foot forward.
Yeah, it's not encouraging that he's already broken his own arbitrary rule. But he's calling her because he's horny. He wants to jerk off.
Well, he wants to have phone sex,
which involves jerking off. Let me just say, this was shocking, obviously, for a lot of us. And I still kind of am unsure about the intention of it in the sense that, like, was it supposed to be hot at any point, do you think? Or was it always supposed to be a sort of cringe sex scene in the way that a sex scene in Girls would be written?
Well, again, having listened to the Writer's Room podcast, no, Daddy MPK meant that very genuinely, that this was a sex scene.
But Carrie was clearly not into it, is the other part. And I get it, like, having been in a long-distance relationship myself, sometimes the timing does not work out.
Well, how could she not be into it when he starts like this?
If I was there right now, I'd be touching you the way you like. You remember how you like me to touch you?
I do.
Touch yourself.
Okay, I know at least one person listening was genuinely turned on by this. And if so, call into the hotline because I'm very curious about why you feel that way.
Again, for a character who has so much history with Carrie Bradshaw that we have watched literally over multiple seasons and in the films and in a season of And Just Like That, I don't know how Aiden likes to touch Carrie.
Also, we've never seen Carrie masturbate, ever. Or have we?
The rabbit episode?
Okay, you're right. She does try the rabbit. I feel like we've seen the other girls masturbate quite a bit.
Well, I mean, this goes into Sarah Jessica Parker's, I'll call it prudity clause. That's a mixture of prude and nudity. So we're going to spare you from maybe the grossest part of this scene, which is they are interrupted not by Wyatt, but by Aiden's knee hitting the horn of his car, scaring himself so badly that he tells Carrie, I think I shit my pants a little bit. Then he demands of her, like, no, 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 let's get this back on track. And then this happens.
Maybe Carrie's into scat. Who knows?
Oh, yeah. Are you still inside yourself?
Oh. Yeah, I am.
Right there with you. Fuck yeah, do it. Here it comes. Here it comes.
Oh my gosh, me too.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, fuck.
Here it comes, Lauren.
Wait, Chell, did he come? Because I wasn't sure. So for those who refuse to watch this show anymore, which, respect, Carrie is not into it, not because it's not hot, but she will go on to explain because her cat, Shu, is staring at her.
Who cares if your cat watches you masturbate? Under the covers?
Yeah, it's hard to say if it really is the cat or it was Aiden's grossness.
No, the cat was definitely an excuse. She was not turned on in this scenario, so much so that I was like, have they lost their spark? Like, are we supposed to think that she's repulsed by him?
I think we're supposed to understand because Carrie will later on, when she confesses to her friends that she faked it during phone sex, that part of their life, their sex life, is the most honest thing about them. And I was like, what?
Well, to be fair, last season, they did have a bunch of sex scenes, and it did seem like Carrie was into it.
So this phone sex scene, I don't know if your mind went there, Chelsea, but it made me go back to season 6 when Big would call Carrie and have phone sex with her. And I just want to juxtapose Big's style against Aiden's style.
Hello?
Remember that red dress you had?
What? Where are you?
In California. In bed.
Oh. I was sleeping.
Alone?
Yes, you woke me up.
You never used to need so much sleep, kid.
I'm old now. Like you.
So the red dress.
Versace or Gucci?
That tiny little strap.
Gucci.
And when I slipped one strap down, the other would fall. Remember that dress?
Yes.
You look good in that dress.
Yes.
Remember when I found you in your closet in just heels and a bra? And I came up behind you and put your hands against the wall. Remember that?
Yes.
Now that's hot.
That's so hot that I would listen to like AI Mr. Big audio erotica straight up.
I guess this is the chief frustration for me and a lot of other listeners, and certainly people on the end, just like that subreddit, where they did it. They did it on Sex in the City. Like, that is a legitimately hot phone sex scene. It's not too graphic. It gives us this great lore dump of these moments we never got to see with Big and Carrie, but we can imagine.
Yeah, but it makes sense that Carrie and Aiden would have phone sex because they're in a long distance relationship. We had to get here at some point. Although they should just be having FaceTime sex because now that technology exists. Although for Carrie's sake, it's probably best that she didn't see him lick his hand.
We didn't get into that. Yeah, Brokeback Mountain, this is not. We didn't get a spitting in the hand scene, but we did get a licking of the palm.
You know what? Was it gross? Of course. But this was, at the very least, interesting, entertaining. People reacted to it online. And I think Anne Just Like That needs these moments. However upsetting, just for the discourse.
As you know, Every Outfit, Inc. is expanding. We're building a studio, and I thought it was time to get our own business line. That's where Mint Mobile came in. Why Mint Mobile, you may ask? How could I say no to their premium wireless plans for just $15 a month? All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You've heard Chelsea and I bemoan living in the hills where our calls would constantly get dropped. Not so with Mint Mobile. We can hear each other perfectly when we call to complain about and just like that. Best yet, you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditched overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get your summer savings and shop premium wireless plans at mintmobile.com/outfit. That's mintmobile.com/outfit. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month 5 gigabyte plan required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. I do want to discuss what happens with Carrie and Aiden towards the end of the episode. Unlike Carrie of the past, she is actually confronting this awkward moment. She calls Aiden back at the end of the episode and says, hey, I sort of fake that. We also haven't gotten into Carrie's fake orgasm technique, which is just, oh my goodness.
Oh, golly, I'm coming.
You know what? I think Trey and Carrie would have been a great couple together.
Faking an orgasm during phone sex is completely acceptable.
Oh.
Don't you think?
I mean, it's certainly easier to do.
Well, it's not the same thing as faking an orgasm during sex, because phone sex is masturbation, essentially.
Right.
I just don't think that's something so fucked up that you should have to like confess it to your friends and then later apologize to your partner.
I mean, but do we even think Carrie is capable of giving even a good fake orgasm? Like, I think, oh my goodness, is as good as we're going to get.
Yeah, I guess the takeaway is that Carrie is quite a bad actor herself. Not Sarah Jessica Parker. Sarah Jessica Parker, great. Carrie, not so much.
Hence why she calls Aiden back towards the end of the episode and is like, hey, I faked that, but I'm ready to do it again. And then not since Natalie Portman masturbating in Black Swan did I have such a scare when Aiden reveals that he can't have phone sex and jerk off right now because his 15-year-old son is in bed with him.
Ugh, you're right. Very Black Swan.
So
that's what happened with Carrie.
Well, Chelsea, how could we forget that her alarm goes off yet again in the house and she can't sleep, so she starts writing.
But we don't exactly know what she's writing yet. Although in the teaser for the season of And Just Like That that aired at the end of this episode, she says that she is writing a novel set in, what, the 1840s, and that it's fiction.
Yep.
Crazier things have happened, I suppose.
We'll get into the implications of Carrie writing a historical novel in a little bit, but I think we need to get to the other shocking moment of this episode. Carrie in that gigantic hat.
So we, of course, have talked about the hat before. The paparazzi photos came out a really long time ago because they shot this scene a very long time ago. It is no less shocking to see it in person.
And not plot dependent at all. So I guess Daddy MPK has let that go completely.
Obviously, wearing crazy hats is part of Carrie's fashion persona. But this kind of transcends that because it's the kind of hat you would only ever see in a fashion editorial. Like, you would never see anything like this on the streets of New York, because if you wore this on the streets of New York, the looks that you would get from strangers. Like, if this scene was supposed to be realistic, people would be staring and pointing at her while she's eating gelato with Seema.
You mean the NYU graduates would be pointing and laughing and filming her? Yes.
Exactly.
I think the level of insanity of the Carrie outfits, which range from good, which I would put the Simone Rocha, to what the fuck, which is this Washington Square Park outfit, I think hint at this reality that Carrie is currently living in, which is a reality parallel to the reality everyone else is existing in.
For sure. The craziest thing is we have no idea where she went in the Simone Rocha outfit, because it cut immediately to the gay bar scene. Where was she going? Was this just her post office look?
I think so.
I also think that this is the best thing she's ever worn on And Just Like That, hands down, because it feels zeitgeisty to me. Like, seeing Carrie in current season Simone Rocha felt like seeing Carrie in current season, like Nicola Ghesquiere Balenciaga on Sex and the City back in the day. Like, it's fantastical and it's aspirational, but it's not so crazy aspirational that it's unrealistic, like when she wears a Versace couture gown or something.
Well, it's of the moment, which the Washington Square Park scene, the dress is vintage Ozzie Clark.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do love the dress. And I love its parallels to the trans pride flag, although that was clearly not intentional.
And then what's the other Carrie outfit of the episode? Oh, when she goes to the Met?
Right, the ballet. And she's in a pussy bow blouse and a little mini skirt. And remember when Carrie dressed up as Helen Gurley Brown last season and then she was annoyed that no one knew that she was wearing a costume? This is why. This could have also been a Helen Gurley Brown costume for sure. Although Anthony made a reference to that girl and Marlo Thomas.
Which, how can Carrie be such a bitch to Anthony? Like, he got the reference.
Shall we move on to Seema?
I mean, I suppose we have to because this is our job, as silly as it is, but
we don't have to go in deep. I'm glad that she survived the and just like that Hunger Games and is in this season.
Well, it's very clear that she is the Samantha stand-in.
Yeah, and she's refreshing because she's the only character that still lives a hedonistic lifestyle. Like when she fell asleep in bed in her lingerie, smoking a cigarette, no other character would do that on this show.
No, you are correct. So she is also someone like Carrie in a very bizarre situationship. But for reasons unknown, she is still with Ravi, the Marvel director, and she is up at all times of night waiting to FaceTime this man.
No, that would make more sense. She's waiting for a Zoom that Ravi's assistant is managing.
Because it keeps getting pushed. The issue for me with Seema is she is obviously the Samantha stand-in, which I love, but we're getting like early season 5, Samantha taking Richard back after he cheated, like desperate Samantha in Seema. So she's been waiting up all night. She lights a cigarette, falls asleep. The edit is so bizarre that at first you're not sure exactly what happens.
Right, because we never actually see the bed catch on fire.
Seema has seemingly set the bed and her hair on fire for a man.
And then she basically demands that Ravi visit her in New York. He does.
This is insanity. I just wish Seema would have a little bit of chill.
Well, if there's any upside to Seema's plotline, it's that they got Ravi off the show as fast as humanly possible.
Oh, not before we went on a location scout all throughout Manhattan.
Which culminated in a CGI pier, which is truly the perfect place for their breakup because I assume that that's what Ravi's movies look like.
If Carrie and Berger had a Hollywood kiss, this is like a Hollywood ending because Ravi says, I will always love you. And then Seema goes, great last line, roll credits.
To be fair, that's kind of an abrupt and mean way to dump someone.
Especially after you demand that they fly, what, 5,000 miles to see you. They oblige. You are also a very busy working person. You understand the demands on Ravi.
Sure, but it's clear that she needs someone that is more available to her.
Well, she says earlier in the episode when Ravi's assistant is like, sorry, like we lunch got pushed an hour, whatever it is. She goes, I could go to set in Egypt in the time that I've been waiting. And it's like, yeah, go visit him.
Okay, I think we can move on from her. We'll see what happens with her this season. LTW.
Let's do it.
She kind of had less to do. She's working on her PBS documentary series about 10 unsung black sheroes. I didn't realize that people used the word sheroes outside of Instagram posts on International Women's Day.
Yeah, LTW's plotline in this episode, she has so much story and yet so little plot. She is pitching her PBS documentary to production company, PBS executives. It remains to be seen. And they love everything she's presented. But here's an idea. What if you took one of those unsung black sheroes and replaced her with Michelle Obama?
I kind of thought that was funny. Or it's a a note from an executive that I can see someone giving. It's preposterous, but I think that's what they were trying to say about how insane notes can be.
Well, is it preposterous? Because the only other storyline is that her husband, Herbert, who's still running for city comptroller, wonders if he's cool. LTW is bullied into doing a campaign event by his annoying campaign manager, Chauncey, but it's all okay because he used to work at the White House, which leads you to believe it's the Obama White House, which then I'm like, are we getting a Michelle Obama cameo?
Look, we got Gloria Steinem last season, so crazier things have happened. I wonder if Chauncey is going to be a big side character or no.
It's hard to say. And I think the only other plot development for LTW is we get to see her fabulous kitchen.
Yeah. And that's what happens with her.
We're out of the closet into this open concept kitchen.
So can we move on to an aspect of this episode that I really loved, which is Miranda.
Miranda.
Miranda has been unburdened by her side characters, Naya and Shay Diaz. So now we have a little more time for her to sort of explore, bring new things into her life.
Be a lesbian, finally. Thank you. It took three seasons.
Yeah, I really like that Charlotte and Carrie went to the lesbian bar with her. That was cute. I also loved the bit about her thinking a woman was hitting on her or giving her the eyes from across the bar, but really it's just Brady's old babysitter.
Cassandra. These are moments I would say in Miranda's storyline are the closest story beats we get that feel like old school Sex and the City applied to this new and just like that world. And through Cassandra, we get this data dump where we learn that Miranda and Steve sold their brownstone, which was my point all along. Why are we having this bizarre fight last season? Just sell the brownstone, split the money down the middle. Brady and Steve are living in a loft, which frankly, I'd love that spinoff show.
No, you wouldn't.
And Miranda has an Airbnb in the West Village, which not the neighborhood I would have picked for Miranda, honestly.
But why not?
And she also comes out as a lesbian and sober.
Well, we knew she was sober.
This is true. But love to see her drinking those phony Negronis.
I think generally she feels less doofusy. Like, obviously, throughout the course of this episode, humiliating things do happen to her. And humiliating things always happen to Miranda. That's part of her character. But I do feel like her soul has re-entered her body.
Yeah, I mean, I think Che Diaz broke her. And now Miranda has remade herself as the Miranda that we remember.
So, Rosie O'Donnell hits on her.
Well, they are the only two randos left at this lesbian bar.
Did Rosie O'Donnell have a spray tan?
You would be the best judge of this, Chell.
Because I feel like she's pale like us, usually. I don't know. Maybe it was the lighting. Rosie's looking good. She's looking generic, kind of basic. She's not the edgy Rosie O'Donnell that we know now.
Which will be relevant to the reveal of Rosie O'Donnell, or Mary, as we come to know her as.
And Mary's just like, hey, I got a hotel room. And Miranda's like, you know, fuck it. I think we've all had that moment.
Yes, which makes their morning after just even more shocking.
When it cut to the morning after, I just couldn't have imagined that I would live to see the day that this would happen.
That your two lesbian icons would have a scene where they sleep together?
Yeah, I think it's just because in 1998, my world revolved around Sex and the City and the Rosie O'Donnell show simultaneously.
Now, Chelsea, be honest. Did you ever write Rosie O'Donnell / Cynthia Nixon fanfic?
It seems like I would, honestly, but no.
I have to say, Rosie O'Donnell as Mary, a little forward considering that we learn this about her.
Oh, you are really, really something.
I am?
Oh my God, yes. It felt so, I don't know, electric, and yet still so natural. I never dreamed my first time could be both those things.
First time?
Mm-hmm.
So then, this was your first time with a woman?
This is my first time with anyone. I'm a virgin. Well, I was a virgin.
You were a virgin?
Yes. I'm a nun.
You're a nun.
Who knew that a virgin nun would have so much game?
Well, see, that's the thing. We think she has game because of the directness of, I have a hotel room. But you subsequently realize that it's more that she doesn't know how to flirt or how to pick someone up because she has no experience doing that. Or at least that's how I interpreted it.
Okay, I do want to get into this because Miranda is kind of cruel the rest of the episode because she will not engage with Mary again because Mary turns out to be a cringe tourist, inviting her to do all these very touristy things. But like, who cares? She's in town for a couple days. There is nothing better than being a tourist in your own city. Like, go to Tavern on the Green for lunch. Who cares?
I don't know. I think being a tourist in your own city in New York can actually be really awful.
We've
all had people visit us and they want to go to the worst parts of New York, which, let's face it, is Times Square. Tavern on the Green, I've only been there for parties where they've just kind of like cleared the whole place out. So I don't really have a sense of what the dining experience is like or the fact that it's passé.
So the next time we go to New York and I invite you to come to the carousels in Central Park, I should expect you to just do a thumbs down.
Yeah, see, that wouldn't speak to me.
I mean, look, I relate to Miranda for not wanting to meet up with Mary, the Virgin Mary. You get it, Chell? In Times Square, especially after Mary has seen Wicked. I mean, we know my feelings about musicals.
Yeah, we really can't escape Wicked this year, can we? And we had previously seen paparazzi photos of Rosie in this Wicked t-shirt and Cynthia. So this scene wasn't surprising. But because I had seen those photos, I thought, there's no way Miranda is sleeping with this character. But they initially made her present as less touristy. And I actually really liked the fact that Carrie gave her shit for that. She said, I can't believe you had sex with a tourist. Like, that's even crazier or worse than a nun. Also, this made me wonder, are there just like progressive nuns that are out lesbians now? Because it seems like that would happen at some point.
So let's get into this, because I feel like they burn a lot of story with this Rosie O'Donnell character because Miranda doesn't want to engage with her until the very end of the episode, where Miranda's like, I took your virginity. I've just come out of a crazy place in my life. I don't want you to make any radical decisions. Like, Miranda's already gone to, oh, this woman is leaving her religion for me.
Miranda knows how whipped she was by Che Diaz and how mentally unstable that can make you.
Right, but I love that Mary is like, oh, no, no, no. I just wanted to have sex.
Like, I just cheated on God with you, but we are still married.
To God.
I just love this whole thing. I know that Dolly Wells, the character of Joy, is going to be a bigger love interest this season. And I just hope that they don't make Miranda settle down too quickly because I really, really like this.
Yeah, I mean, this is something we have to give Daddy MPK and the writers their flowers when they deserve it. This is what we've been asking for, of like, get back to the boyfriend or girlfriend of the week.
Yeah, and I think that being a late in life lesbian and dating in middle age is an interesting thing for them to tackle. Someone's got a date.
You were talking earlier about how there's not as much of the doofusification of Miranda in this episode, but I think they've saved that for Charlotte because this storyline is incomprehensible.
Okay, well, I do think that Kristen consistently is great at being the comic relief on And Just Like That. But yes, I do think that this plotline is a little bit beneath her. As much as I love Richard Burton, as someone that has also rescued a bulldog, obviously I vibe with this more than your average person. But I think my issue, and I'm assuming your issue, is that it's just a very confusing plotline about a dog getting canceled.
In a roundabout way. So Charlotte and LTW are walking in, I imagine, Central Park in neon versions of like a Sopranos outfit.
To me, it reminded me of the part in Barbie where Barbie and Ken are doing like the Venice Beach rollerblading scene.
Right. It is giving early 90s. It's giving Sopranos tracksuit. And I'm like, ooh, okay, more Charlotte LTW. This feels good. This feels safe. And then suddenly this, like, there's nothing else I can call her, but like a Central Park Karen runs up to Charlotte and is like, your mongrel of a dog shattered my dog's vertebrae? Question mark.
Yes. Also, I think this is a good time to play that call.
You guys, I can't, okay? I'm watching the episode, the old lady in the dog park. I've seen it so many times. She's the one who throws fake blood on Samantha. Murder! Murder! I swear to God, I've seen her. And I think that she's, that they had her be like another nasty bee again.
Yes, caller, you are correct.
This fuckette is so on it.
The woman has a name in this And Just Like That episode. It's Jane Hayes. She is played by an actress named Nancy Shane, who must be friends with Daddy MPK, because not only is she activist number two in the first Sex and the City film, she plays Viola in an episode of Sex and the City, and she was on an episode of The Comeback.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that could speak to a relationship with Daddy MPK, but also she could have just been a working actor in New York for the past few decades.
That is also true. Well, glad she's getting work. The accusation is that Richard Burton was off leash and attacked another dog.
The dog has a name. It's named Peanut.
Sorry, and attacked Peanut. So Charlotte, in a scene that happens off screen, accuses their dog walker of negligence. So that dog walker quits.
And then Charlotte has to miss Lily's ballet thing.
It doesn't matter.
And then she tries to get Richard Burton in doggy daycare, but the daycare guy recognizes Richard Burton.
He reveals that Peanut is also housed at that same daycare and therefore can't take Richard Burton in.
Okay, but how does he know what Richard Burton looks like?
Maybe it's because this Central Park Karen is spamming Richard Burton's Instagram.
How did she find Richard Burton's Instagram?
If you remember from last season, we know that Charlotte, one of her many jobs, is making Richard Burton a mini celebrity on Instagram.
Why does Charlotte agree to pay for Peanut's MRI?
So that her dog doesn't get canceled on Instagram?
And then the reveal is that it's actually a case of mistaken identity.
Because Charlotte finally acquiesces and is like, I will pay for Peanut's stupid MRI if you stop leaving angry emojis on Richard Burton's Instagram. Again, for those who are not watching this season, we visually see none of this. It is all tell, no show. And just as Charlotte accepts her fate of having a semi-canceled dog, another bulldog runs onto this woman and Peanut, and she's like, look at your dog!
And that's crazy because Richard Burton is sitting right there.
We should say that this woman is like, well, I don't have my glasses, but... And then Charlotte becomes very indignant of like, you can't tell two English bulldogs apart. Which, you know, I'm not an English bulldog owner, but I'm with Charlotte. I believe I would be able to tell these two dogs apart.
Oh, for sure. Let's hope that Charlotte gets more to do this season. Let's pray.
I can't believe we came so far. We're in the third season. Charlotte's working again and we're back here.
I know. Final thought. There was no And Just Like That. Or there was an And Just Like That, but it didn't come when we expected it.
It came verbally from Carrie when Anthony apologizes to her. When he's like, you were really mad at me. And then she goes, and just like that, I'm not.
Well, you and I, obviously, over the years, we have made fun of some of the And Just Like That's. But I didn't hate that they were there. I always look forward to the And Just Like That.
Well, it's part of the campiness of the show. And it is interesting the things that they've dumped out of, like Carrie podcasting as being an updated allegory for the column, the taking out the voiceover and having these And Just Like That at the end of the episode. Now we've taken the And Just Like That's out. We were promised voiceover and we got it. Sort of.
We barely got it. I think when we were promised voiceover, we expected like column voiceover.
Yes, which is the purpose of that was twofold, right? You hear what Carrie is presumably writing in her article that week, but it was also connective tissue between all of the storylines, which I think without that kind of connective tissue voiceover is why a lot of these storylines, especially LTW and Seema, feel like they're running parallel to the three main women.
Right.
Well, it's very clear that, or at least to me, that the voiceover is Carrie writing some novel.
This 1840s novel. I guess we should now get into the teaser for the rest of the season, because we did learn quite a bit.
That's right. At the end of this episode, they not only played, they actually didn't play a preview for episode two. They were like, this season on end, just like that, here we go.
So the Dolly Wells romance is teased a little bit in this, which we already kind of knew about. We meet LTW's hot editor.
Great. Love an affair plot line.
We see Steve briefly. Steve comes back.
Thank God.
Most crucially, we see Patty LuPone playing Giuseppe's mother, a very scary Italian woman. Love that. We learn that Carrie has a hot neighbor. Great. I hope she dumps Aiden and ends up with him.
Well, how could she dump Aiden? Because also what we see is a rehash of the season four closet fight where it's very clear that Aiden's moving in with her.
I don't know if I can handle that.
You're going to have to. Chelsea, we have 11 more episodes.
Yeah, it's hard to say what would be better, Aiden moving in or Aiden and Carrie continuing to be in this very precarious long-distance relationship that doesn't really seem like it's bringing either of them joy.
I mean, it's very clear that Daddy MPK loves chaos, so I'm sure we're going to get it all. We're going to get Aiden, we're going to get another love interest for Carrie, and just, you know, we'll see where it ends up.
And guys, we will be here.
Well, one of us will be here every single week.
I will be here, at the very least.
Am I even pregnant? Did I fake a pregnancy so I don't have to talk about it just like that? Hard to say.
Also, if you, for some reason, want us to talk about this episode more, we have a new episode of our post show and just after that that will be coming out on Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions on Sunday. So tune in. Or don't.
For those of you who do not care about our commentary of And Just Like That, you will now get your wish. We are going to get into pop culture stuff. So Chelsea and I were on the phone this morning discussing what we were going to discuss on the And Just Like That portion of the podcast. And Chelsea just went, I have to go. Taylor posted something. I go, what did Taylor post? She goes, I don't know. There's something on Instagram and I got to go to her website. I'll call you back.
God, I'm stupid. So what you are referring to is the fact that today Taylor posted this very long letter on her website in a handwritten typeface that was very distressing for me to read, written on what looked like an old weathered piece of parchment. Very Carrie Bradshaw's 1840s novel. And she basically said that she has purchased her masters back. The masters to her first six albums and everything around them, like the images on her album covers and stuff.
So that's why she was on tour for the Eras tour for two straight years. She's like, you know what? I'm going to rack up an amount of money that Scooter Braun can't say no to me.
I guess so.
Because as of now, we don't know the dollar figure attached to it. I believe her masters were sold to Scooter Braun and that other company for like 200, 300 million, something like that.
Something like that. I'm very happy for Taylor, although this is somewhat distressing news for people that were looking forward to Reputation, Taylor's version, because in this long letter, she basically said that she's only re-recorded a quarter of the songs from that record. And she's struggled with it because she felt that it was the only album that she's ever done that she couldn't really improve upon by re-recording it.
Whoa. Do you agree?
Well, it came out not that long ago. What's she going to do? Like, I can see how she could improve certain things on her debut album.
Getaway Car, the 17-minute version?
That would be great. She does say that vault tracks from Reputation will come out at some point, which is encouraging. That's what we care about. But I think what a lot of Taylor Swift fans also were looking forward to is like, oh, maybe will we get a Getaway Car music video or something like that?
I love the idea that it's not that she wanted to buy her masters back, but she got such writer's block trying to re-record Reputation. She was like, fuck it. Here's $400 million. Can I have the masters back?
I think a lot of her fans are happy for her, obviously, but at the same time, people were really, really gearing up for Reputation because the re-recorded version of Look What You Made Me Do appeared in an episode of The Handmaid's Tale a couple weeks ago.
Right, right, right.
And people found out like, oh, this is Taylor's version. So this is how she's sort of kicking off this whole thing.
Is this the first time she's referred to the vault? Because that just makes me think of when we were children.
The Disney vault?
The Disney vault, yes.
Well, there's two vaults, Lauren. There's the Disney vault and then there's the Taylor Swift vault.
Which I guess technically The Handmaid's Tale is in the Disney vault because it's a Hulu show. And do you have this same issue? I can't get into my Hulu account now. They're like, just go to Disney Plus. And I have a subscription for both. I don't know if I'm being double charged, but there is nothing funnier. And it also makes me feel a little bit conservative when it's like the Disney films, the Avengers films, and then like Dying for Sex.
See, I haven't been locked out of Hulu yet, thank God, because I need it to watch The Handmaid's Tale. And I'm aware that I'm the only person that still watches that show, but...
Didn't it just end finally?
It did just end.
Good, bad?
The penultimate episode with the Taylor Swift song was like the episode, to make a parallel with Girls. You know what I mean? Like, the penultimate episode was the best. The one after it, I didn't like as much, but we understand why it's there. But there is going to be a sequel series.
No.
Yes. And I will watch it, tragically.
Here's what I'm getting with all of this Taylor Swift news, and we'll get into the Justin Bieber, Hailey Bieber stuff. It's a real mixed bag of a week for Scooter Braun. Scooter Braun has lost the Taylor Swift Masters, but he might finally get paid back from the alleged loan and tens of millions of dollars Justin Bieber owes him.
Right, because Justin Bieber canceled part of his last tour.
Yes, which comes from some TMZ special report that I didn't watch, but I saw the clips on TikTok.
Yes, and this week it was announced that his wife, Hailey Rhode Bieber, has sold Rhode Cosmetics to Elf. Who knew that Elf Cosmetics was killing it like this?
Yes, Elf Cosmetics will acquire...
Elf Cosmetics has $800 million to give Hailey Bieber?
Yes, Elf Cosmetics will acquire Rhode for... The headline is $1 billion, but I read the article.
Clickbait.
Yes, it's $600 million in cash, which is nothing to cry about. But the billion comes from $200 million in Elf stock... Sorry, it's just funny to say Elf. Which, by the way, did you know that Elf stands for eyes, lips, face?
No, I did not know that.
I learned from this article that it is. And then an additional $200 million, which is based on the future growth of the brand over 3 years. But that's $600 million in cash. I call that a bald win. Ayo!
That's horrible, Lauren. And it's reminding me that we didn't talk about the Why Wyatt line. On in just like that, but let's move on.
I thought you were going to say we didn't even talk about Justin Bieber's horrendous Instagram post when his wife last week debuted on the cover of Vogue magazine, which I'm now looking at it. Has publication become so dark that it's not just the June, July issue? It's just the summer issue. Is this one issue for the entire summer?
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice that. The whole Justin Bieber thing overshadowed every aspect of this cover reveal, which is so deeply depressing. Would you like to read Justin Bieber's caption or should I?
I mean, I don't know if I could do it justice, but I'll try. So he posts his wife in Vogue magazine. Nice, right? Till you read the caption. Yo, this reminds me when Hailey and I got into a huge fight. Okay. I mean, this could go either way, right? I told Hales that she would never be on the cover of Vogue. Yikes, I know, so mean. For some reason, because I felt so disrespected, I thought I gotta get even. I think as we mature, we realize that we're not helping anything by getting even. There's some other stuff, but like, that's the main takeaway.
Okay, the end part is the best though. We're honestly just prolonging what we really want, which is intimacy and connection. Good to know he's going to therapy. So baby, you already know, but forgive me for saying you wouldn't get a Vogue cover because clearly I was sadly mistaken.
Clearly I was sadly mistaken. Could have used a second round. Could have used some proofreading before posting.
This should be a jailable offense.
Well, he got dogged so hard that by the end of the day, he had changed the caption to just a bunch of emojis.
Yes, and the sad thing is that all he had to do was write, "Congrats, baby," with a heart emoji and call it a day. But this is like the most extreme backhanded compliment, essentially.
Well, I don't mean to be too chronically online, but I'm sorry. This is narc behavior. And by that, I mean narcissist. But like, way to make this about you. Literally, yeah. This cover and the photos and the video had been up for an hour. And then for the next 3 days, everyone just talked about this Justin Bieber post. This woman had to sell her brand to Elf just to get people to stop talking about this.
She had to sell her brand to those goddamn Keebler elves.
Kris Jenner has a new face.
She does indeed have a new face. And dare I say, it is spectacular. I think she should just cop to it and brag about it.
In a way, she has, because the fact that People Magazine and Page Six both ran stories that confirmed the facelift and said it was the work of Stephen M. Levine. Like, we know who those sources are. If Kris Jenner did not want this out, then it wouldn't be out. And seeing that these deep plane facelifts now cost $250,000, and we know what a deal maker Kris Jenner is, something tells me she was like, if you knock off 50K, I'll admit to getting this done in the press.
Well, I think it's a flex to admit that you got worked on by this one particular surgeon, because he also did Lindsay, Demi, Soon Yi, Soon Me.
Which Demi?
Demi Moore.
Whoa.
Okay, he didn't actually do Soon Yi, but
would this man be into doing a two-for-one, perhaps?
I know.
For a middling podcast duo.
Well, this man is such a genius. I'm not even mad that he charges 200K. It's worth it for someone that has to live on camera like Kris Jenner. And honestly, I may reconsider my own goal of home ownership and just work towards getting a facelift at some point.
It's just, it's spooky.
See, I don't even think it's spooky. I think it's flawless.
No, it's spooky in the sense that when, so her new face debuted at Lauren Sanchez's bachelorette party.
Perfect place to reveal it.
In Paris, where I swear to God, I thought it was Kendall.
And yes, some of the images that she's posted on her Instagram account have obviously been face-tuned, but still, we saw video footage of her walking around Paris looking like this.
It's also, sorry, Chelsea and I are just staring at images of Kris Jenner's face. It's not just the face either. It's the neck and shoulders, which I think previous to this era of facelift hasn't been figured out.
Well, Dr. Stephen Levine has definitely figured it out. So good for him. It's nice to see innovation.
Speaking of innovation, I don't know about you, Chelsea, but my DMs have been flooded about this Skims pierced nipple bra.
The latest genius offering from Skims.
I got the nipple bra. I don't know if I'll be buying the pierced nipple bra.
I could buy the pierced nipple bra. I just want to see how it looks as someone that doesn't have pierced nipples. I am curious about what it would look like.
Well, this is my confusion, because at least, I mean, this gets back to the Sex and the City episode with the fake erect nipples, but to tease a man with fake erect nipples, that's one thing, but what happens when you take your bra off and your nipples aren't pierced?
I know, it's false advertising is what it is. The pierced nipple bra works if you're in a long-term relationship, I guess. The pierced nipple bra would not work for a one-night stand or for the first time you have sex with someone. Like, that's a crazy reveal. But I love it as a design object itself. Like, it's very avant-garde. It's very Gautier in spirit. you know?
To that point, I do think we need to buy the pierced nipple bra just to add it to the Every Outfit archive of ephemera.
Yeah, for sure.
What else?
This was announced a couple weeks ago, but we haven't yet gotten to it, which is that Pierpaolo Piccioli is in it, Balenciaga, replacing Demna.
How's Tatiana doing with this news?
She's not well. And I personally feel quite conflicted about this announcement because on one hand, I think that the transition with the couture will be pretty seamless.
Right.
I can imagine Pierpaolo debuting his fabulous gowns in that couture salon. Gowns are his strength, specifically making gowns that reference all of those great mid-century designers like Cristobal Balenciaga, like Christian Dior, like Yves Saint Laurent, etc. The ready-to-wear is what I'm a little bit scared of. And ready-to-wear is something that I think Demna did so well.
I mean, Tat's just going to have to become a Demna Gucci girl. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, but she doesn't feel like being a Gucci girl. I'm sure she will want to be a Gucci girl by the time the collection actually happens, but it's a big leap.
I mean, it's really proving that the brand itself kind of doesn't mean anything anymore. It really is the designer there at the time.
Yeah, and it's kind of sad because they've done so much brand building with Demna. Like, every Balenciaga store in the world now looks like a prison, essentially. It's also, they have such opposite worldviews. Like, Pierpaolo is someone that is very interested in things being traditionally beautiful, whereas Demna is not interested in that at all. It is a much more conceptual designer. So they have such opposite worldviews when it comes to clothes.
Yeah, only time will tell. And in, oh my God, it took this long to announce it news, Maria Grazi, whatever her last name is, has finally succumbed. She has announced that she will be leaving Dior as their creative director after a 9-year run. This has been the longest 9 years of my life, Chelsea.
I know. Look, we have obviously never been fans to anyone that has listened to this podcast before, but I do think it's worth noting that there was a lot of growth at Dior during the 9 years that she was there. It's not as if she was unsuccessful.
Sure. I mean,
it wasn't our taste. We don't want those beach bags that say Dior.
And to be fair, one of our greatest selling merch items, the We Should All Be Miranda shirt, was inspired by a Dior item.
Yeah, actually, we owe her. We should not be talking shit. But I think that a lot of people are ready for a different vibe at Dior, for Dior to be more of a leader in terms of fashion, and not just because it's this mega brand.
Well, I'm sure Jonathan Anderson is ready to finally announce that he will be the head of women's wear.
Yes, I'm sure that this will be formally announced the second that we stop recording this podcast.
Always. All right. I think that's everything.
Is that everything?
I mean, we could get into the Pee Wee documentary, but I think let's save that for next week.
Let's talk about that next week. Everyone watch it if you haven't already. I know you have a Max subscription, so do not let the Pee Wee documentary pass you by. And we will be back next week to talk about that and episode 2 of And Just Like That. And God knows what else will happen.
All right, guys. See you next week, or see you tomorrow over on our VIP channels if you want even more And Just Like That chat.
Bye, guys.
Bye.